In 2002, Tony Gattari launched Achievers Group. Tony's insatiable hunger for personal and business development offered a unique opportunity to create a business that allowed him to follow his passion. His passion? To create a boutique business development company which offered the following philosophies. Number one, to have fun with clients and team members. Life is too short to be miserable. Number two, to help people. Number three, to take the mystery out of business, making the complex things simple. And number four, to make money. Since then, Achievers Group have expanded. They've worked with over 110 businesses worldwide, offered wisdom and business knowledge to over 200,000 people a month through e-zines and articles, and have been able to make a profound difference in so many people's lives. Following is a selection of interviews of Tony sharing some of his business secrets. Each track on this CD is a new topic, so sit back and enjoy as Tony shares some amazing business wisdom, proven and tried. If this CD helps you in any way, or you'd like to know more about how Achievers Group can be a part of helping your business, we'd love to hear from you. You can visit us online at www.achieversgroup.com.au. As Tony says, we love what we do, and we do what we love.
Do you think your customers believe that you deliver what you promise? If they don't, chances are that a lot of other people will find out what they think very quickly. Our sales and marketing wizard Tony Gattari of Achievers Group has that warning for everyone in business. He calls it the Prove It Principle. But what does that mean?
Michael, I think the challenge in marketing right now is that we live in a society of doubting Thomases. We live in a society where we've been exposed to so much marketing and selling that the experience and the expectation have been mismatched. And I think if we really want to take our businesses to the next level, we actually have to provide proof that we can deliver on our promises. It's great to promise something, but there is an element in all of us that says, hang on, prove it. And I think what we've got to do is we've got to understand what are the forms of proof that people are looking for, and is there a ladder that I need to take people up, and what are the best forms of proof at the moment, not only to people of my generation who are baby boomers, but to people who are Generation X and Generation Y, who are obsessed with social media networks like Twitter, like Facebook, like MySpace, and their entire life is very much dependent on what others say, not necessarily what they think. So it's really understanding the power of that and delivering in your marketing so you convert better because it's what others say about you, not what you say about yourself.
Now, if you get it wrong, and a product or the service that you provide is not as good as it should be, then Twitter very quickly gets the message.
Oh, absolutely, because the great challenge that you've now got with this proof is that people can say good things about you, but they can also say bad things about you. And I think there's a classic case in all of this. A number of years ago, there was a customer who had a bad experience with Dell. And this customer felt very frustrated from a customer service perspective. And revenge is sweet. And he realised that 20 years ago, his complaint would not be heard worldwide. It would get slammed at particular middle management. So he decided to take his own destiny in his own hands. He wrote a blog. Now, not only did he write a blog, he posted the blog. And because of search engines, everyone else who had a similar experience started to share their experience. Now, I'm led to believe that over 12 months, there were in excess of 600,000 people who were actually saying, this is my experience with Dell. Michael Dell realized that he can't ignore these issues any longer. So I think the great challenge is that consumers now have power, which they probably didn't have before. And I think that's really challenging in a lot of multinationals, because in the past, they wanted to control what was said about them. You can't anymore.
Now, Tony, tell us about your ladder of proof.
Okay. When I'm talking about the ladder of proof, I'm actually going to give you four levels. I'm going to give you the most basic level. And this level of proof is around 10 to 40%. So it's 10 to 40% of proof will come from this. Vision. Vision of what you can actually do is a form of proof. It is not the best form of proof, but it is a basic form of proof. So I'm suggesting that on your website, you actually need to provide vision. I think on your brochures, you need to provide vision of what you can actually do. It's not what the product is, it's what the product or service will do for your A-class customer's life or business. That's the vision. The next form is statistics. Did you know, Michael, that two-thirds of every dentist use Oral-B? Wow. Two-thirds. Very famous advertisement. Statistics are really powerful because in many ways, statistics give credibility to proof. You know, we have two forms of our brain. We have the left and the right. Statistics appeal to the accountant in all of us who actually says, prove it. Now, the problem with statistics is they can't be remembered, but they are still very good forms of proof, and I would rate them around 20 to 60%. The next one is a very powerful form of proof, demonstrations. Michael, I know if I wanted to sell you a new car or get you to buy a new house, the thing that I'm most passionate about is getting you into the showroom to drive it. Because as soon as you start driving that car, it's not a car, it becomes your car. And one of the keys to really building a successful business is get your prospects to touch, to feel, to sense that they own the product before they buy it. That's what demonstration is. When I was at Harvey Norman, we used to say to the people, don't ever touch the computer. Allow the customer to touch the computer. Allow them to play on it. As soon as they play on it, they own it. Get their hands on the keyboards. Get them to open up the phone cabinet. Let them play with the phone. Let them do the dial stuff. Do all of that, I said. Just do it. But what happens if they nick it? Don't worry if they nick it. They won't nick it. Let them believe it's theirs, because it will be theirs.
Right.
And the last one is social proof. Now, social proof comes in many formats, but predominantly it's called testimonials. See, I don't believe you, Michael. Well, why should I believe you? You're in sales and marketing. You're always going to spin a story, aren't you? I'm going to spin a story. But really, I will believe what others say about you. And that's really important. But I think it's really more important than that, because I think you've got now technology which allows you not only to get written testimonials, but also the ability to do video testimonials, the ability to do audio testimonials. Look, I have had the experience where I've had one prospect look at one testimonial and he bought. He said, I've got to buy from you. He was moved by someone else's testimony. And what was really important is the testimony that he liked the most was the video one, of a prospect or a client of ours ranting and raving and saying, hey, they did an amazing program. It was fantastic. He almost had tears in his eyes because they were genuine. They were a couple. They said, this is what our business was like. This is now what it's like. We want to say thank you to Tony for helping us. Got me over the line. It wasn't because of me. It was because of that.
Tony Gattari, Achievers Group. And you can see that interview on our website, www.be.com.au. Your business is nothing and it'll go nowhere without built-in systems. Super salesman and master systemizer Tony Gattari of Achievers Group is passionate about that belief as he analyzes how businesses work. But what is a system? Tony Gattari starts with a personal example.
Let me explain to you a story that happened in my own life, which I think really highlights what a system is. You think my name's Tony Gattari. It's actually not.
Oh.
It's Antonio Roberto Gattari. I'm a wog. Did you know that, Michael?
I knew a bit about the background, but go on.
I'm an Itai. Mm-hmm. Now, when I got married, and I got married 16 years ago, I didn't marry an Italian. I married a New Zealander, Ingrid Joy Aitken. Now, my wife, when we got married, she wanted to make my most favourite food that I adored. And she asked me, what's your favourite food? And she said, and I said, lasagna that my mum used to make. It was absolutely amazing. I used to have friends from university. They weren't my friends. They were only my friends so they could go around to my mum's to eat the foods. And this was the most amazing lasagna. And it took my mum 27 years to perfect this recipe. It was extraordinary. Now, what happened is my wife tried to cook the lasagna for the first time ever. It was appalling. It was terrible. And my wife listened to this CD, but she knows it was bad. But my wife is actually quite persistent. And what then happened is that after a little time, she rang up my mum one day and she said, when are you going to cook the lasagna? Now, here was the challenge. My mum can't speak English. My wife can't understand Italian. My mum can't write English. My wife can't read Italian. But my wife realised that the key was observation. So she went to my mum's place on a Saturday afternoon and asked my mum to make this lasagna. And what she did was amazing. She followed her around and wrote everything. Now I can tell you unashamedly, Michael, that my wife, who is not Italian, who hasn't had 27 years of heritage, of living in a small fishing village in Italy, can now make better lasagna than my mother. Because you know what the system is? It's the recipe. And what I'm suggesting is the reason it is so important to systemize your business is because if you don't systemize, you're kidding yourself. You don't have a business. You just have a job. Because you can't grow the business because you are the business. And that's very frustrating, isn't it? Because you can hear all this wonderful advice from me on how to sell and market your business. But you don't want to grow it because you're in so much pain at the moment. You're actually working 80 hours a week. And you're saying, Tony, I don't want to hear you about how to grow my business because I don't want to grow my business anymore. Because if I grow my business anymore, I'm never going to see my family and wife. So here's the key. You've got to upgrade the engine before you accelerate the vehicle. Upgrading the engine is taking a four-cylinder, 1300cc Volkswagen engine and dropping a Porsche turbocharged engine in the same cavity. That's the importance of business systems.
Right. Now, you have half a dozen rules in terms of systemizing.
Yeah. If I was to give the listeners just really six simple principles when they're actually going to build systems, these are some of the principles that I would apply. Number one, do the systems support the vision? Now, there's a basic assumption there that you actually have a vision. So probably the listeners are saying, well, we don't really have a vision. I think you've got to create your vision before you build the systems, because your systems are there to replicate the vision when you're not there. Number two, do they actually help define the brand, and do they create a consistent level of service? Now, I'll give you an example of this. Back about 9 years ago, one of the most amazingly and sexy franchises that you could buy was McDonald's. Now, a lot of people who are really smart always wanted to buy a McDonald's franchise. And there was at one stage, a nine-year waiting list for a McDonald's franchise. But it was really interesting because other competitors were offering a better return on investment, but everybody wanted a McDonald's franchise. And you know the reason why? Is that once you actually bought a McDonald's franchise, once you had worked in the business for a year as part of your franchise agreement, the franchise agreement said this. It said that you only have to work one day a year to keep your business. See, McDonald's is not a restaurant. It's a system that allows a 16-year-old to run a $5 million business. That is the simplicity of McDonald's.
And that's a system. Right, number three.
Number three, can all the systems be tied back to job descriptions and KPIs? So what you've effectively got to do is you've actually got to be able to measure people's performance based on those systems. That's pretty obvious. Can all your employees, all the team members be trained in the systems? Because it's great, and let's not insult anybody here. A 320-page manual is not a system. It is boredom. No one reads it, do they? You give a Generation Y a 320-page manual and say, please read this tomorrow. You think they're going to read it? So what you've effectively got to do is you've got to make the training entertaining. And number five is, will the systems be relevant in 5 years' time? So you're actually not building a business where you are now. You've actually got to think, are these systems going to take me where I need to go in the future for my business?
Okay. Now, briefly, what are the areas that you should consider systemizing?
Well, there's probably about seven major areas. There are a couple of areas that are so easy to build the systems because they're already on the internet. You just have to type in what you want and you can download them. They're traditionally what we call HR systems. So things like job descriptions, KPIs. So that's the standard one. Then you've got finance systems. Then you've got management systems. Then you've got operations systems. Then you've got sales systems and marketing systems. Now, the reason I put sales and marketing systems is there is this assumption, this amazing assumption that you have to be born a great salesperson. You don't. The system is the business. See, if I have great systems, Michael, I can make average people look great. So the likelihood of any employee get outstanding employees for the rest of their business life is pretty rare because they'll leave you and compete against you if they're that good. So what I've actually got to do is I've got to build a system which is so great that the business is the system. And the great thing is the system looks after the team. The team looks after the customer and the customer pays the owner. So effectively, the owner has a responsibility to be the system creator, developer, and maintainer. Because if you've got the right system, you'll have a great business.
Tony Guattari, Achievers Group. That interview too is available on video on our website, www.businessessentials.com. Do you have any idea of your business sales conversion rate? Sales and marketing expert Tony Guattari of Achievers Group believes that most business owners don't know. He calls it a potential goldmine. But what is conversion?
Let's say in your business, you get 100 inquiries for people who want to subscribe. And 10 of those people become subscribers. Your conversion rate is 10%. Now, the reason it's so important, especially now, Michael, I can't reinforce this, is that if I was building a business or trying to improve a business in a recession, the greatest single marketing area of improvement is to improve your conversion rate. It's not to increase your leads because that costs money, doesn't it? Okay. But let's just say that you're getting a lot of leads, but you're not converting those leads. You're just throwing your money away, aren't you? And that's the great challenge. But you know what's even more frightening? Most business owners have got no idea what their conversion rate is. So how can you improve something if you don't know what it is? For example, I'll give you a classic example. We went and saw this business owner, and this business owner hollered and he said, Tony, our conversion rate is 80%. Oh, yeah. And I said, Bob, I really hope it's 80%, but let's measure it. We measured it for 1 week. You know what it was? 18%. Mm. Now, he was disappointed. I was elated because I said to him, Bob, this is a gold mine. Because you know what this means? This means that fundamentally 82% of all your prospects are not becoming customers. That's where the gold is at the moment. If we just improve that and did nothing else, you would double and triple your turnover instantaneously.
Okay, the big question, how do you convert those people?
Okay, there are many, many strategies to improve conversion, and what I'd really like to do is just give the listeners what I consider to be the six big rocks. If I was in a business right now, these are the ones I'd probably be doing straight away. The number one thing is you've got to measure it. As soon as you measure something, you improve it, because the principle of measurement means improvement. You know, it's like losing weight. The first time you actually put yourself on the scales and measure yourself, and you continue doing that, chances are you will lose weight. So one of the first things I would be doing is I would be asking every particular listener, how do I measure my conversion rate? Don't say it can't be done. There is always a way to measure conversion rates. And as soon as you measure it, make sure you start reporting it. Number two principle, set your KPIs for your salespeople around conversion rates. For example, let's just say my conversion rate was 18%. What I could potentially be doing is bringing all my sales team in and actually saying that next month, this is our conversion rate at 18%. We're going to achieve 30%. And if we achieve 30%, what I'm going to do is I'm going to reward you with an additional bonus. That's number two strategy. Number three strategy is train your salespeople not to be order takers, but to be problem solvers. See, one of the greatest ways to improve conversion rates is to use your existing salespeople or customer service agents and really tweak their skills to stop being order takers to become wonderful problem solvers. The next strategy that I would introduce is called risk reversal. And this is, I think, much more powerful now than it was a little while ago. You've got a lot of people at the moment who are reluctant about opening up their wallets. You know what a guarantee says? You can't lose. What I'm going to do is I'm going to take the entire risk of the entire purchase away from you. I'm going to back myself so much, Michael, that if I let you down, I give you a no strings attached 100% guarantee. Now, I know the listeners are saying, I can't do that, I'll go broke. Please, separate the forest from the trees. In my opinion and in my observation and in my experience, there's only roughly around 2% of people who ever invoke a guarantee. 98% don't. Because you know what? They're usually good. People are generally good. You got some rat bags. Don't allow the rat bags to become the majority. Life's not like that. And the other strategy that I would introduce is the importance of having testimonials. Because, see, I'm a bit suspicious now. Because you're in sales, you're in marketing. Of course you're going to tell me how great your company is. Because it's your job. You might exaggerate your claims. You might say yes to everything. And remember, I'm a bit of a cat. I'm a Generation Y. And Generation Yers aren't so gullible as baby boomers. They're not. Because they have access to the internet, don't they? They are superbly more educated than we were ever about products and services. But what the cat believes is not what I say. The cat believes what others say. And the power of a testimony is so amazingly important to help your conversion rate. Because what they'll say is, well, gee, you must be good because everyone's raving about you. And the last one that I would introduce in improving conversion rates is I think it's really important to have a vision and a mission statement that is customer-centric, that you advertise from a marketing weapon perspective. A lot of organisations, they spend all these strategy days and say, hey, let's do a big vision. And that's all great and that's all fantastic, but usually you know where they end up? In a filing cabinet. What I'm suggesting is you take that vision, you take that mission or purpose, you actually create a document that you promote on your website, in your signage, because in many, many ways, many, many customers are attracted to great visions. It breeds a sense of security, it breeds against value, because they know that you're in it for the long term, and that will also help your conversion rates.
This is probably a topic for another day, but you've got 80% who haven't converted.
Yep.
How often do you go back to those people?
Oh, okay. Every 90 days. I would always, always, always have an amazing database. Because my database is my gold. And what I'd suggest any business to, it finds amazing way to collect names, because collecting names is a healthy business. If you can collect names and you can get people onto a database and you can ask them to buy and they say no, and if you can come back to them in a systematic way, you have an outstanding business that will defy the recession. It will actually prosper in the recession.
Tony Guattari, Achievers Group. That interview too is available in video on our website, be.com.au. In tough times, go for the low-cost sales and marketing strategy for your business. That's the philosophy adopted by marketing wizard Tony Guattari of Achievers Group. He's a veteran of many years of selling with the Harvey Norman Group. Tony Guattari calls it milking your own cows. But what does that mean?
We have got this barn full of cows. We ignore our own cows, Michael. We jump the fence. We try to jump the electric fence that's called barriers to entry. We spend a lot of money trying to get to the other fence. And you know what we try to do? We try to actually take someone else's cows. Now, what happens is that we're spending so much time trying to get these other people cows, we forget about our own cows. And you know, they're bursting at the seams full of milk, saying, milk me. And we don't milk them. This is insane, Michael. It's just, you'd be an idiot to do that. But that's what we do in business, don't we? Because we also, let's go out there and hunt for more customers. No, milk your existing customers first. And what I'm suggesting is that you improve the frequency of transaction, which is how often they buy from you. It is so easy to do because it just involves communication in many essence. Because, you know, fundamentally, you've got to treat your customers like your friends, because it's the most unfair advantage in the entire world. We buy from our friends. All things being equal, all things being unequal, we always buy from our friends. You know what friends do? They talk to each other. They communicate to each other. They care about each other. They actually take an interest in each other. That's what friends do. My question is, do your people treat your customers like friends?
So, how do you then go about making sure that happens?
All right, look, I'm going to give you what I consider to be some really top tips for improving your frequency of transaction. Number one tip that I would do is give remarkable service. Now, don't give me this baloney that you give them good service. You're expected to give them good service. It's the basic essential of what a business does, isn't it? It's like me going to the supermarket and celebrating with my wife, Ingrid, and saying, guess what, honey? Let's celebrate because the supermarket had food. It's supposed to have food. So customer service is the bare minimum what an organisation needs to do. You know what it has to be now? It has to be memorable and remarkable. So what you've got to do is you've got to create systems and devices to get the wow factor going. That's number one. Number two, please have a database. Invest not in MYOB. MYOB is a brilliant accounts package. Invest some money and purchase a CRM package, which is customer relationship management packages. There are many out there. There are both online and offline systems. The benefit of a CRM, it allows you to track every single purchase, but it automates the whole procedure. It actually starts to send out letters for you. Okay, it is just amazing the systems that it actually introduces into a business to allow salespeople to become much more systemized in their approach. That's number two. Number three is you've got to give customers a reason to actually want to come back. Because, you know, the old days, oh, they always come back because they always buy from us. I'm really suggesting, I don't think that's going to work. I'm really suggesting that with so many options and so many choices and so much convenience now, you've got to actually give people a reason to come back. So what I'd suggest that you do is you consider looking at loyalty cards, if it's B2C, VIP cards, and some sort of rebates. Now, I like the one rebate because many of your listeners may not be selling directly to the end consumer. They might be selling to another business. And in my days at Harvey Norman, this was an amazing strategy that many suppliers did. You know what they said? They said, Tony, we'll give you X amount of dollars in rebates, but we'll also give you an additional rebate if you purchase this amount of equipment from us in the next calendar year. Now, what they did is they broke it up into quarters. And every week prior to the quarter ending, they'd ring me up and said, Tony, we just want to tell you that that $20,000, you can get that $20,000 if you just purchase another $2 million worth of stock. And I'm a competitive person. I wanted the 20 grand. So what they did is they forced me to buy more because they dangled a carrot in front of me and said, look at this. Isn't this wonderful? Don't you want the carrot? And I said, I want the carrot. What do I have to do for the carrot? And they said, buy more. That is an amazing strategy to get around. So I'm suggesting that you actually try it. And you know what it does? It retains your customers to buy from you for an entire year because they're locked in. It is a recession-proof strategy to lock your customers in by giving an incentive to actually buy from you. Then it gives you an opportunity to communicate them on a quarterly basis and give them the check in front of them. So when you get the money, write out the check in front of them and say, this is for you. It's called instant gratification. They'll go, wow, how do I get more of that? It's fantastic. Now, I'll give you another strategy. You must maintain regular contact with your customers. Now, in a world of the internet, this shouldn't be hard, should it? You know, we've got the no-cost stamp now, haven't we? Like if you say, oh, well, I can't spend 50 cents on a stamp, I'm not asking you to spend 50 cents on a stamp. It's called internet. I'd be suggesting that you at least need to contact your customers at least 90 days. Every 90 days, you should be in contact with your customers. Now, it doesn't have to be face-to-face because this is where you've got to be smart. You've got to be able to grade your customers A, B, C, and D. A is awesome, B is basic, C is can't deal with, D is dead. Now, what I'm suggesting is that 20% of your customers are going to give you 80% of your volume. So what you're actually really going to do is I'm going to invest a lot more time and energy into the A's and the B's, aren't I? But I still want to keep contact with the C's and D's because I never know. But I can do that in a low-cost way via email. But the other side is where I get my salespeople to go out there and take them out to lunch and play golf with them because they're my best customers. So I'd also suggest that they also introduce call cycles. Don't allow salespeople just to go visit who they want to visit. Because repetition is the mother of skill. And you know what people crave for? Consistency. It's not doing we're going to get in contact with our customers once. It doesn't work once. It's for life. And what you've got to do is you've got to look at the long-term picture. And last but not least, to really improve your annual frequency of transaction, inform your customers of your entire range. I know it sounds really simple, but I can't tell you, Michael, how many times we've been with our customers to their customers. And you know what they've actually said to us? We didn't know you did that. Because we have this real narrow focus. So what you've actually got to do is you've got to introduce new products and services, but you've actually got to tell them. And this is so important in a recession. Because what you're actually trying to do is you're fundamentally trying to make sure that that wonderful cow that is bursting at the seams, that you can actually milk it with all the six teats at the same time. That's all you really want to do. So I'm asking the listeners, stop wasting your money trying to rip off someone else's cows. Go and have a look at your own cows. Go and have a look at how full they are and go and start to milk them. Because if you don't milk them, someone else will.
Tony Gattari, Achievers Group. If you'd like to see that interview, you can access it on our website, be.com.au. How closely have you embraced marketing on the internet? Are you still in denial about it? Super salesman and marketing guru Tony Gattari of Achievers Group denied it for as long as he could until he realised he'd be left behind if he didn't change his old-fashioned values. It wasn't easy for him, but he read lots about the internet and at the same time learned lots about what it could do for him.
I think the biggest lesson that I've learnt is that we are in a global economy. Traditionally, we think very narrowly. What the internet actually does is you're not playing only in Australia. You're actually playing worldwide. And you've really got to get your head around how do I create a product or service that can be marketed on the internet. And what devices do I use to actually create leads, to actually get that lead to become a customer, to get them to buy more often? And what I really wanted to do is I just wanted to give the listeners some really simple tips of what has actually worked for us. Because this is our experience of frustration, misunderstanding, lack of guidance, people trying to say this is the best solution. I would have a very diversified internet marketing strategy. I wouldn't rely on one strategy. I would rely on many. But these are the key ones. Number one, have a simple website. It's called the 3-second rule. Mm-hmm. Okay. You know how you got some websites with all this wonderful flash animation? Between you and me, it's a waste of time. If it's hard to navigate around your website, it's like going to a shop. If it looks confusing, people are time poor, what do? Switch off. Too hard. Next thing that I would be doing on a website is I would be giving value, because what do you really want on a website? The customer's name and address. So on a website, I'd be saying, we have the most amazing monthly e-zine. And when you sign up to our e-zine, Michael, you will get a $29.95 report on how to build your business. You're looking at the website going, wow, $29.95 report, and you get a monthly e-zine. What am I doing? I'm collecting names off my website of prospects, because the key is building a database. So that's number two strategy that I'd be doing. Number three strategy, the importance of YouTube, the importance of Google, the importance of search engines cannot be underestimated. Because what you actually want to do is you want to dominate a page. So if I type in your company, Business Essentials, in Google, which most people will do before they buy from you, what you actually want to do is you want to dominate the next 20 pages. Now, how do you do that? You actually do that because you've got to realize that Google favors content. And if you change the content consistently, you get ranked higher. So your internet strategy is never static. That's why you have to do blogs, because blogs, by definition, are ongoing. YouTube, because it's video, its content is rated much greater. So you're looking at things like blogging, you're looking at things like YouTube, you're looking at things like search engines like Technorata, Metacafe, which rate videos. Because what you're actually trying to do is you're trying to populate. So when people put in Business Essentials or they put in Business Improvement Strategies, they get a list of Business Essentials. That is called search engine optimization. That is on the left-hand side. The other alternative is to actually spend money and use a technology called Google AdWords. Now, Google AdWords is this. When you go into Google and you type in business improvements, you'll see companies on the left-hand side. That's search engine optimization. On the right-hand side, you'll see those people who actually are paying to be there. That's called Google AdWords. Now, in Google AdWords, this is a whole topic in its own right. You know, I could spend 2 days on this. But what Google AdWords is that you actually pay money and you set a budget. And what it does, it actually puts you up the top or the middle, depending on your budgets. Now, you won't get ripped off, because what you do is you set a budget of how much you want to spend each day. My recommendation is don't spend any more than $400 a month on Google AdWords. But you don't want to be first, do you? No, because you know what most people do? They look at the first one, they buy the third one. It's true. You look at the first one, you say, and you go down to the next one, you go down to the next one. You actually want to be third or fourth, don't you? Everyone says, I want to be number one. Don't be number one. Be about number three. So there's some strategies. And the other things that I think are really, really important, if you are a consultant or an advisor, if you have a white-collar B2B business, LinkedIn is a professional development tool. We use LinkedIn, and I have actually achieved leads from LinkedIn for speaking engagements, from work, from the United States, because what LinkedIn is, it's a professional networking association or group of people that come together and you put in all your details and everybody can see what you do, what you've done, and you're linked in with other people. You can send them messages and everybody looks at it. It is actually quite huge. LinkedIn is the equivalent of Facebook for business. Now, I wouldn't use Facebook for business. Facebook is social. LinkedIn is for business. So the website is www.linkedin.com. Have a look at it and see what results you get out of it. And all I'm suggesting is that you've got to have multiple strategies. And here's a really simple strategy. Your email signature.
Go on.
I'm looking at your business, okay? You've got a wonderful business called Business Essentials. Why wouldn't, on the bottom of your email signature, why wouldn't you put down, you know, Michael and Executive Chairman, congratulations on your promotion? Why wouldn't you put, have you listened to the latest Business Essentials CDs? We currently have a trial for only $5. Click here to find out now. Why wouldn't you put that down the bottom?
Good question.
Because I would, wouldn't you? And they click there, and you send out emails. Everybody gets your email. Executive Chairman, what is this Business Essentials? $5. And they click onto it, and you might get 20 registrations like that. Because if you don't ask, you don't get. It's everywhere, Michael. Now, I'm really embracing the internet. I still hate it, but I'm telling you, I understand it, and I'm getting so immersed in it. And it's just so important to understand that cats, which are Generation Ys, who are really, really, they will always do their research. Anybody that has any brains before they any time employ your services are going to go onto Google, and you know what they're going to do? They're going to type in Business Essentials. The question is, when they do that, what do they find?
Some wonderful and very helpful interviews for a start. Tony Guattari, Achievers Group, and if you'd like to see him in action, you'll see the video on our website, www.be.com.au. Get in first with your customers. Give them something they won't forget before you do the deal. That's what super salesman Tony Guattari of Achievers Group calls an irresistible marketing offer. Tony Guattari, why should we do it?
I think it's so important because we've got so much clutter at the moment from marketing messages. How do you get through clutter? How do you get through the situation where a consumer is bombarded by marketing messages?
So where do you start?
Well, first of all, you actually have to make an irresistible offer. Now, what I mean by irresistible, it can't be average. It actually has to be memorable. It actually has to do something that is extraordinary. It has to give something to the consumer before you receive it back. Now, that's a very novel approach because our approach traditionally to marketing is what? I'm not going to give you anything until you buy something. Okay? What I've actually got to do is I've got to invest in the prospects and then I'll make the withdrawal later on. So I've got to give something away. It doesn't necessarily have to be a product. It might be a report. It might be something to help them in their business or help them in their life. It might be a giveaway. But it's got to be irresistible. And if it's not irresistible, don't do it. Don't waste your money. Right? You're just throwing money. You may as well burn $20 bills and say, I'm throwing it away. Don't advertise just for the sake of advertising. It is insane to do that. We work with a lot of companies, Michael. You know what they say? We've always done it this way. Why do you do the Yellow Pages advertisement? We've always done it this way. Does it work? We don't know. We never measure it. No idea. Definition of insanity. Albert Einstein said, doing the same thing and expecting a different result. So one of the key principles I would say is, first of all, make an irresistible offer. Make it hot. Make it memorable. Make it stand out from the pack. Make it go, wow, that is extraordinary.
And it needn't be expensive.
No, because perception is reality. Very interesting. A lot of companies we work with, they look at their competitors who are much more successful than they are from a marketing perspective and get angry at them saying, we do that. My question to them is you should be promoting that you do that. So you have jewels and diamonds, but they're still in the ground. You've got to take them out of the ground and you've got to let them shine. That is the irresistible offer. So think about the things that you currently give to a consumer anyway and try to market those as being irresistible. Next principle. You got to go to a thirsty crowd.
Meaning?
Well, you've got to know who your target market is. So you've got to go to a crowd that says, I need your product or service. Unless you're an Apple, unless you're a Sony, you don't develop the market. You go to the market. Your business is about supplying services and goods to a thirsty crowd. But here's a key. I can make you more thirsty. Because once I go to a thirsty crowd, I've got to understand the principle of psychology. Psychology says that if I want to actually get you to change straight away, I have to make you dissatisfied with your current situation. So a lot of my marketing messages are aimed at saying, Michael, you're miserable with what you've got. So I make you more thirsty, don't I?
Mm-hmm.
Then I provide you with an enormous amount of vision of what my product or service can do. I don't focus on the features, I focus on the benefits. I say, if you buy this product, this is how your life could look like. And we have wonderful images, don't we, Michael, of wonderfully fit, tan people who are saying, if you buy this car, you are going to look exactly like this. We have the wonderful family by the seaside. We have, if you buy this product or this service, this is how your life and business will look at. We sell the dream. But you can't sell the dream. You've got to make them dissatisfied with what they currently got. And the next key is you've got to make it easy for them to buy. That's how I make you more thirsty. So you might be thirsty when you get to me, but if I'm a really good marketeer, I make you so thirsty. You say, I've got to have the drink now. Before, you could wait a week. Now, by the time I've marketed to you, you've got to say, I didn't know I was this thirsty until I came and spoke to you. That's marketing.
But then you want them to come back for another drink.
Oh, yeah. Never stops. I'm going to upsize you. Right, I'm actually going to say, hey, Michael, that was a good drink, wasn't it? And then I've got to get you to come back often, because the best customer is the one you've already got. And in these ways of building businesses, I will tell you the dumb way. Here is the dumb way of building a business, generating more leads. The greatest cost in running a business is the cost of getting a new client. Here's a smart way to build a business. Milk the cows that are in your barn. Get them to drink more than once. Upsell, cross-sell, find additional products and services that you could sell to them. Have them on a database, regularly communicate to them. Every 90 days, they are your future livelihoods. In a very competitive marketplace where people are price driven, the best customer you've got is the one you've already got.
And particularly if you've satisfied them.
Yeah, because they're A-class customers. You know what A-class customers do? They don't just buy from you. They tell others how good you are. They actually work for you. You don't pay them commission either. They're not even on your books. It's extraordinary, isn't it? You could sack all your salespeople tomorrow. That's how I would do it. That's how I would make, in all my experience, if I was to give the owners free steps on how to build a remarkable business, the three things that I would do would be so simple. One, make an irresistible offer. Two, go to a thirsty crowd and even make them more thirsty. And then, once they've drunk once, get them to come back again and again and again and again. That's how I do it.
Tony Gattari, Achievers Group. You think you're happy with the current supplier. Then along comes a competing salesman who makes you aware that you're really dissatisfied. Tony Gattari of Achievers Group, himself a super salesman after many years with the Harvey Norman Group, has done just that, opening a customer's eyes to the fact that they're in pain with the existing arrangement. When you ask him for help, he has the sale. Tony Gattari, pain versus pleasure. What do you mean?
Recently, I have been doing some studying on ancient philosophy, and Socrates said it this way. Our entire human behaviour is based on a very simple assumption that we do things in our life that give us pleasure and we avoid pain. Now, if we take that formula, that philosophy, and I know that the only time we change is when the pain of where we're at is actually greater than the pain of change. Now, if we took those two concepts, which are universal concepts that we know from a psychology perspective, and we introduce them into sales and marketing, what it's actually saying, Michael, is this. If you want to be really good at closing sales and being an outstanding marketer, you actually have to make people, one, dissatisfied with their current situation. Now, this is could be tough to the audience. I'm not actually saying it because I want to just put a disclaimer here. These techniques can be viewed as manipulation. I've studied this. The difference between manipulation and persuasion in terms of tactics are exactly the same. The only difference is intent. And the intent in persuasion is to help the other party. The intent of manipulation is to harm the other party. Now, here's what I'd be doing. Now, I can have a great product or a great service, but that will not be good enough to get me the sale, especially now. And we've all gone to meetings and we've done marketing where everyone says, gee, that was a wonderful product. That's a great service. And we think we're going to get the sale, but we don't. What we're doing is we're providing vision, but we actually haven't made people uncomfortable with their current situation.
Okay, but how do you do that? How do you tell people they're in pain?
Ah, I ask you really deep questions. I'm going to start at your head, Michael, and I'm going to hit your heart. And what I'm doing is I'm searching through the power of really powerful questioning, and I call them killer questions. And when I hit a pain point, this is what I don't do. I don't heal it straight away. I hit it 3 times because I've got to get that bruise to bleed. Now, how do I do that? I ask you really deep questions that stir your spirit, because we buy emotionally, not logically. And then you get so uncomfortable, you say, Tony, how can you help me? Guess what? I've got the sale. What I'm actually doing is making you uncomfortable with your current situation. Now, in many times, you don't know that you don't know. Okay? So a very good marketeer will actually develop devices in their marketing arsenal to actually highlight people's position, even though they don't know. It could be done by a questionnaire, a survey, a diagnostic, are some of the tools that really savvy marketeers are now using. Before I even turn up to the meeting, I've actually got you a point of discomfort. Then what I say to you, before I even try to flog my product, I say, Michael, can I just ask you a couple of questions? And when I found your pain, I actually dig deep. I ask 3 or 4 questions on that issue. Then I move to pleasure.
So you have to highlight the fact that they have pain they mightn't have known about.
Absolutely. And you have to be really comfortable, because my job is to help you to solve your problem. Ignorance is not bliss. Ignorance is tragedy. I'm taking you from a position I don't know that I don't know to a position of now I don't know. You will not get a sale until you bring people to the light.
So you need to change them without them realising that they need change.
Absolutely. I've got to make you uncomfortable with your current situation. Now, I've got to make you uncomfortable with your current vendor. You might be going in there every single month trying to get this big account from this vendor. The issue is not you provide a really, really good service. That's not the issue. They can see that. The reason they're not changing is because you've given them no reason to change, because in order to change, what must you do? You must highlight the pain of the current circumstance. What I've got to do is I've got to make you uncomfortable with your current vendor. So what do? I actually say to you, Michael, what's the most important thing that's really important to you when you actually buy our products or products from our industry? And you say delivery. I've hit your pain. Then what do? Has your current vendor ever let you down in delivery? Then I ask a deeper question. How much money did that cost you? And that's the second question. How did you feel? Now, at this stage, forget the language, you've got the shits.
And real pain.
This is fantastic. You know what you say to me? How can you help me? And here is the formula for a sale. Dissatisfaction times vision plus first steps equals a sale. My responsibility is to get you dissatisfied with your current situation. I've got to use that in my marketing and sales arsenal. Then I've got to actually provide the vision of what my product or service will provide. Not the features, the benefits, what it's going to do in your life and in your business. Then I have to make it really easy for you to buy, called First Steps. It is extraordinary. And I know this because early on, when I came out of the corporate career, I needed to sustain a lifestyle that I couldn't afford. So I needed to make some money really quickly. And I remember going in there one day and doing this technique on a cold call. I walked out in a meeting with a $100,000 order. Okay, it is extraordinary. But the only thing that I can actually ask anybody to do It can be used for good, but it also can be used for bad. And I have seen con artists use this technique over and over again to rip off people. The tactics are the same, the intent is different.
Tony Gattari, Achievers Group. You'll find a video version of that interview on our website, www.businessessentials.com. The right attitude to selling and marketing can help you get through the worst economic times and indeed prosper. Tony Gattari of Achievers Group knows that. As a super salesman for many years with the Harvey Norman Group, he's seen other tough times and learned how to turn them to advantage. He cites the Harvey Norman example even today. Tony Gattari, what's the starting point?
You've got to have an amazing attitude. Because, look, your attitude will determine your activities. So if you've got a lousy attitude, guess what you do? You make no phone calls. If you've got a lousy attitude, what do? You actually say, let's not pick up the phone today. Let's not advertise today. Let's not actually prospect today. Let's not close sales today. And when you have that lousy attitude, you'll get very bad activity. But if you have a great attitude, guess what happens? You do great activity. Enormous amounts. Then what happens, once you've got the activity going, you get results. And when you get results, you build your business. So it's a very simple formula. Everybody wants the results. Without understanding, results come from activity. Activity comes from attitude.
Spending money in a recession or in tough times, there's going to be a question mark because the customer mightn't have money to give you back and buy your product or service.
Look, clearly, and I'm not going to insult anyone's intelligence here. The market may shrink, but here's what I'm thinking. If your competitors have got this below-the-line victim mentality, which they probably have, because they're all talking to their customers and they're all going, gee, it's bad at the moment. Isn't it terrible? Poor old me. We're about to go broke. Now, if you went away from the hurt, you actually said, no, we're not going to do that. Just imagine what would happen. You would pick up their share. Because what they're doing is they're cutting back. You're actually saying, we know that the pie is smaller, but we can move from 10% market share to 20% market share. Not because we're doing anything better, it's because they're doing nothing at all. And I learnt this from Jerry Harvey. You know, Jerry Harvey was a master of this. If you even notice just Harvey Norman now, right now, just the last week, the amazing, insane amount of advertising they're currently doing. They're putting this philosophy into action. And I've seen this work. It is brilliant. But the other thing that's really great, you don't have to spend your own money. Because, see, a lot of organisations want to partner with organisations who have got a good attitude. Because they're in the same situation. So they're actually saying, if you've got a great plan, we'll give you money to advertise that. So I'd be, right now, I would be ramping up my sales and marketing. I would not be necessarily spending my own money. I would be going back to my suppliers. I would be saying, hey, we have a great business opportunity for you. And because they need you to fire, because if you don't fire, they don't sell the stock. And everyone else is doing nothing and you're doing something, you're going to get everyone else's money too.
And at the end of the recession, or whatever we want to call it, you'll have a whole lot of new customers you mightn't have had before.
Extraordinary. And that's the great thing, and this is what I've just known. Seasons come to an end.
And by having gone out there aggressively, you've picked up people that might never have been to you before.
Absolutely. And what I'd suggest also to the listeners is that there are basically five ways to build a business. The first way is to generate leads. The second way is to convert the leads that you've got. The third way is to increase the average dollar sale of those customers. The fourth way is to increase the frequency of transaction. And the fifth way is to improve margin. Right now, I'm figuring that I would want to introduce low-cost ways to build my business. The two that I would be nailing right now are the lowest-cost ones. Number one, fix up and improve your conversion rates. Don't go out there and spend a lot more money trying to find new customers. Get really good at turning a prospect into a customer. Now, that's really simple to do because you've already got the people who are supposed to be salespeople, but they're probably order takers and they've lived a blessed life for about 5 years because the market's been so hot they've been able to get orders by default. Challenge them to rise to the occasion. The other area is that once you've got a customer, get a larger sale from them. Learn how to upsell, learn how to cross-sell, learn how to add value. Because those two strategies are so incredibly low cost, because effectively we're already paying for those people to do those functions. And all it really is probably some training, some coaching, some role-playing, and really challenging them to earn their wage based on performance, not just turning up.
So what you're really saying to sum this up is that you can prosper in tough times.
I reckon it's a great opportunity. I'm pretty optimistic at the best of times. I'm not an idiot either, right? You've got to have a great attitude as you work your way out of circumstances. Because this is what happens. Everybody wants to have a great attitude when they have the great circumstance, right? I'm figuring you've got to have the great attitude and that will actually create the great result. Now, I'll give you an example of this. It's a story. It's a wonderful story. I'll read it to you. It's called The Story of the Hot Dog Man. A man lived by the side of the road, and he sold hot dogs, Michael. And he was really hard of hearing, so he had no radio. He had trouble with his eyes, so he read no newspapers. But he sold really great hot dogs. He put signs on the highway advertising them. He stood on the side of the road and cried, "Buy a hot dog, mister," and people bought his hot dogs. He increased his meat and bun orders. He brought a bigger stove to take care of his trade. He finally got his son to come home from university to help him out. But then something happened. "Father," the son said, "haven't you been listening to the radio?" His son said, "Haven't you been reading the newspaper? There is a world recession on, and war has erupted in the Middle East, and people are losing their jobs." Whereupon the father thought, "Well, my son's been to university. He reads papers and listens to radio, so he ought to know." So the father cut down his meat and bun orders, took down his signs, and no longer bothered to stand out on the highway to sell his hot dogs. His sales fell overnight. In conclusion, the father went to the son and said, "You're right, son." The father said to the boy, "We are certainly in the middle of a big recession." I hope we get it. I hope we get it, guys. Because ultimately, the story, more than any girls, is never, never stop selling and marketing.
Tony Gattari, Achievers Group. Yes, we all have to deal with cranky customers now and then, but how do we win them over? Tony Gattari of Achievers Group, himself a master salesman after many years with the Harvey Norman Group, has drawn up a list of what not to say. Tony Gattari, you tell us not to say sorry. Why not?
Michael, I've been married. For the first 7 years of my marriage, I kept on saying sorry to everything. Right? My wife would say, "Clean up your mess." You know what I'd say to her? "I'm sorry." She didn't believe me. But I could say it in 17 different languages. I was great at it, Michael. It was fantastic. You know why sorry doesn't work? It only infuriates them because, first of all, it describes my state of being, not her circumstance. And you know what? People don't believe you when you say I'm sorry because it's the recovery that counts. Number two, I apologise. Better than I'm sorry, but still not good. Mm-hmm. Because it's a bit weak. It addresses the customer's circumstances, but it sort of may be viewed as being insincere. The excuse, no one cares.
If you got it wrong, you got it wrong.
No one cares. Hmm. You know, I worked for Harvey Norman. You know, I used to get customer complaints all the time because when they got to me, they were amazingly big problems. And in all my experience, the issue has always been not the problem, but how the problem was handled. And one of the key issues that we always had is salespeople had excuses. You know what the classic excuse was? "Oh, I didn't sell you the product. That's someone else's problem." they're not working today. You'll have to come back tomorrow. You didn't buy it at our store. You've got to go and travel 42 kilometres to go back to the store you bought it from. Now, come on, who cares? You took my money. Fix the problem and fix it now. Next one, blaming someone else. Exactly like the excuse. Now, here's a doozy. This is what you're not to do. Don't cite company policy. Now, I realise the need for policies. Don't get me wrong. I don't want you to feel that you've got to be rebellious in the way you do business. I recognise the need for policy, but what infuriates a customer is to be cited company policy as a legitimate use of power to stop me talking. We've all had the experience, haven't we? Have you had the experience?
Yeah, absolutely.
Mate, big companies, we won't name them, but we can all probably come. Okay, and we get on the phone and they say it's not our company policy. How do you feel? Mm. Appalling, isn't it?
Yeah.
Don't do it. Mm. Next one, sorry about that. When you say that, what does it really mean?
Yeah, well, in your boot.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Next one, thinking who cares. If you're now thinking, I don't really care about my customers, leave your job. It's not right for you. Next one, thank you. Thank you is an amazingly good response to handling a customer complaint. Why? Because the only way we can really improve our business is by listening to our irate customers, because sometimes their frustration can actually lead to ways that we can improve our business. But the classic for me, the best way that I have seen to address a cranky customer, and this is what I use, and I have a certain personality, so you've got to be comfortable with your own personality, is the statement, oh, that's horrible. Now, when it's done sincerely, not flattery, it is very powerful. Because what I'm doing is that I, as an employee, are more concerned about the problem than you are. You start to say to me, Tony, it's not that bad. I say, yes, it is. What happens there is that we're starting to work on the same team. That's the power of saying, oh, that's horrible. Now, if I give the listeners four really simple steps on how to address a cranky customer, this is what they are. Step number one is you've got to build a connection with the cranky customer. You've actually got to have empathy for their problem. Not sympathy. Sympathy means I'm talking down to you. Empathy means I understand your problem. Now, never, never say that you're wrong. Say we apologise for the inconvenience. Now, once you've got empathy and you say, oh, that's horrible, here is the key step number two. Listen. Let them talk. And then you have to ask them, is there anything else? So you just got to make sure that once they've actually sort of said, this is my problem, you've addressed it back to them in their language, you've actually said, is there anything else before we address this issue?
Okay, step number four.
Step number four is resolve the issue. Now, you don't have to resolve the issue on the spot, but you actually have to give them a commitment of what you're going to do, when you're going to do it, and how you're going to do it. And the key here is to under-promise and over-deliver. That is so important. And the key here is to manage their time expectations. That is so important. See, a lot of people say, oh, we'll deliver it to you in 5 to 7 days. Now, you're the consumer. What did you hear?
That I'll get it in...
How many days?
Five.
Five. You know, I'm the supplier. You know when I have to deliver it to you? In 7. We have a problem, don't we? That's why you have to have precise and absolute communication. Don't say 5 to 7 days. Say, Michael, your new lounge suite will be delivered in 7 working days. That's really precise, isn't it? Mm-hmm. You're not going to phone me on the 5th day, are you?
Not if you've said 7.
But if I said 5 to 7, I reckon you'll be on the phone at 5 days.
Yes.
And I'm going, no, you've got to wait till 7 days.
Yeah.
What are we doing? We're taking inbound phone calls that disrupt my productivity. It's insane. Don't do it.
But if you can deliver in four, you...
If you deliver in four, you've just created a memorable experience and just created a raving fan. And this is what I also would like for the listeners to understand. If you have the opportunity, build some fat. If you have the opportunity of managing the customer's expectations, and if you know that you can deliver a product in 2 days' time, don't say 2 days' time, say 3 days' time. Because then they'll get it in 2 days' time, they'll go, wow, that was extraordinary. Of all the companies I've ever done business with, no one has ever delivered a product on time. You have. You have just created a walking, talking, word-of-mouth advertisement for your entire business. That is worth its weight in gold.
Tony Gattari, Achievers Group. You must make dealing with your company memorable for today's customer. Tony Gattari of Achievers Group makes that point as he compares the old generation of consumers with the new. He's a super salesman after many years in senior management with the Harvey Norman chain. Tony Gattari, what's changed in customer attitudes?
I think 15 to 20 years ago, there were basically three major scarcities that the consumer had. The first scarcity was cash. Okay, so the whole idea is you can't buy my product or service because you don't have cash. 15 to 20 years ago, we saw an explosion of credit cards and the infamous interest-free. We saw 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, and last month, Michael, in New South Wales, they introduced 5 years interest-free. So now that issue has now been addressed. The second issue 15 years ago was choice. People said, well, you know, it's a small store, small outlet, don't have much choice. That whole problem has now been addressed by the introduction of new products, new models, new ranges. But not only that, stores now are virtual stores. You know, go on to Amazon, for example. There are 192,000 books. So that now has been addressed. And the last challenge 15 to 20 years ago was the availability of product. I can't get the product. Now, we've addressed that by enhancing distribution models. We can deliver it overnight. You can place the order over the internet. Or we've opened up more stores and more outlets. We've downsized, we've put them into smaller geographical regions. We've created distributors to sell our products. Now, here's the challenge. We are still promoting those strategies, but the consumer has changed and now has new problems.
So let's look at those new problems.
All right. First problem, you and I all have. We live in the Western world. Our greatest problem is time. I don't have any. I'm always stressed. I'm always busy. Even when I go away, I actually carry a BlackBerry with me because I'm always on the go. We are time poor. It's actually becoming worse. So I'm thinking as an extraordinary marketeer, an extraordinary business owner, I have a responsibility to make sure that I actually reduce the customer's time. I've got to make myself convenient to my target markets. Not when I want to be open, but when they need me to be open. Now that could be internet, that could be online transactions, that could be 24/7. That's the first issue I have to address with the new consumer. Second challenge.
You need to attract attention.
Oh yeah. Now this is a big one. Currently, you are probably exposed to in excess of 130,000 messages every single month. You get so much clutter in your mail, you don't even know what to do with it. You get so much junk mail, you look at the lights and you don't even open the envelope anymore. There is so much TV advertising. There is so much internet advertising. It is all distorted because I'm not getting your attention anymore. And this is freaking out a lot of organisations because they can't get people's attention. You know how you get people's attention to the new age consumer?
Please tell me.
You have to make your company memorable. If you are average, you are dead. If you are average, you are extinct. Making it memorable means that you need to create a unique selling proposition that fundamentally solves the customer's problems. Doesn't only solve the problem, you know what it actually does? It offers a guarantee that says, if we let you down, we're willing to back ourselves.
Now, that word guarantee is a magic one too, though, and that comes down to trust.
Oh, yeah. And it's a real, real big issue. And that is what we draw on the third major consumer need. is consumers are looking to deal with businesses who they can trust. Now, the question is, why don't they trust you?
Yeah, and how do you do it? How do you achieve it?
Well, let's explore why they don't trust you. Because we lie. We produce a brochure. We say we're the best. We produce a brochure. We say we're the biggest. We produce a brochure that's saying, hey, look at me. I'm the most successful company in the world. They believe it once. Then they have the experience. And it's fair to middle, even appalling. So they say, once bitten, twice shy. They're like cats now, not like dogs. Dogs are loyal. Cats, you know, have a bad experience. I don't want to know you. Now, the key now is that I have to be authentic to my consumer. But you know who creates the authenticity? Not me, the company. Not me, the owner. You know who has the greatest ability to really convince that new consumer? An existing consumer. It's called the power of testimonies, the power of social proof, the power of, I don't believe you, Michael, but wow, do I believe other listeners who talk great things about Business Essentials. That's why I'm going to buy a Business Essentials subscription, because everybody's raving about what Business Essentials does. That's your greatest salesman, isn't it? Now, here's the key. In testimonials, listeners, you might want to take notice of this. It's very easy to get written testimonials. I would ask you to spend a little bit more money and get video testimonials. Because video allows the consumer to use their body. It's called emotion and passion and enthusiasm. And nothing sells like passion and enthusiasm. So get those testimonials, go to your clients, ask them and say, hey, we're enhancing our marketing and we were interested whether we could interview you on our relationship. Most of them will say yes, bring in a little video camera and produce video testimonials. And when you get them, put them everywhere. Put them on your website, create a YouTube site for all the Generation Ys, everywhere. It'll have a profound impact on your business.
But the overall message in this is forget the past and look to the future.
Yeah, but we can't do that all the time, Michael. We can't. Large organisations are large. They try to protect what they've got because they've spent a fortune on infrastructure.
But that's why a smaller one can turn around more quickly.
Absolutely. Small organisations have a unique advantage to the new customer because the new customer doesn't buy brand. They buy uniqueness. In fact, a large organisation can work against a new customer because a large organisation is considered by the new customer to be old-fashioned, antiquated, slow. New organisations are what? Funky? Lively, passionate, and engaging. Have a look at the success of Google. Have a look at the success of Yahoo. Those organizations were started very small, and they created an army of evangelists. And they didn't do major TV advertising. It was all word of mouth. It was created by the power of testimony.
Tony Gattari, Achievers Group. The greatest way to build a business is to reduce the cost of getting a client, then to increase the lifespan of that client relationship. Tony Gattari of Achievers Group is passionate about that mantra. Himself a master salesman after many years in senior sales management with Harvey Norman, he calls it managing your average dollar sales. He says first we have to measure it, then train the sales team to understand its importance. Tony Gattari, you say that one way to do that is to offer package deals.
Yeah. Don't just sell a product, sell a solution. Understand what that solution is. Create a checklist of all the products that they should purchase and take that and turn that into a total package. You might have a gold, silver, bronze package. That package might include a product. It might include an extended warranty. It might include a service contract. What you're doing is you're chunking it up to improve your average dollar sale.
And you set goals, no?
Absolutely. No, you even do more than that. You actually reward your salespeople on achieving those goals. You know how we get caught up in let's pay them commission? Why could you not focus? And we've done this for a client. We said, all I want you to do is I want you to pay your people for the next 3 months on achieving a certain average dollar sale. Soon as we rewarded them for it, they improved it. Now, we could stop doing it after 3 months because we changed their behaviour. Because remember, we only listen to one radio station, What's In It For Me. And if you want to improve your average dollar sale, you just can't tell people to improve it. You've got to give them a reason to want to improve it. So I'm suggesting that you don't just set a goal, you reward people for achievement of that goal and be generous at the beginning because you're trying to change a habit. And habits need to be changed rapidly. In order to change habits rapidly, you need to reward generously.
Can you say if after 3 months, if we achieve those goals, you've got to set new ones, haven't you?
Absolutely. But what you could do is then you could actually start working on conversion rates. So you can continue to rotate them time and time again. You don't have to continue to set those goals. There can be different goals.
And one that you've often said before and others have said too, don't discount.
I hate discounting. Discounting's like heroin. It'll kill you. Right? It is just amazing how many people think they have to be the cheapest. It is amazing how many organisations look at their competitors. It is amazing how many salespeople say, boss, we have to be the cheapest. It is amazing how many salespeople wouldn't even know how to sell. Right? All they are is glorified order takers that whinge and complain that we're too expensive, and we believe it. The issue is not with the customer. The issue is with us. Right? We need to replace our order takers with problem solvers. We need to actually stop discounting just because somebody says that's expensive. That's expensive is a statement of fact. It doesn't mean I want a discount. So we've got to actually really understand to stop discounting. It is a virus that affects every business.
And you suggest only servicing A-grade customers?
Absolutely. Absolutely. In every business, there are four different types of customers, A, B, C, and D. A is awesome, B is basic, C is can't deal with, D is dead. All right? We spend a lot of time trying to market to the dead. The deads are the ones who complain, they whinge, they never pay their bills. We then advertise on price, and what do we drag in? The worst sort of customers. Why don't we just look after our best customers? Because if we look after them, not will they only just buy from us, they will actually invite their friends to buy from us too.
And do you want to stock a higher priced range?
Yeah, absolutely. Best way to increase your average dollar sale is work on this principle of good, better, best. So what you do at the moment, you might have two products in a particular category, introduce a third at a higher price, and guess what people will buy? The one in the middle. So what am I doing? I'm forcing the price point up. Now, I may not sell a lot of that high-priced product. Don't worry about it. It's not there to sell volume. It's there to drive up the average dollar sale.
Carry exclusive lines.
One of the things that we worked on in Harvey Norman, and one of the strategies to improve the average dollar sale, you can only buy this product at Harvey Norman. We couldn't get shopped out. We had turned a commodity into an exclusive line. And it's very easy now to create exclusive lines because production runs can be so short. Carry exclusive lines and make sure that your salespeople recommend the exclusive lines because not everyone's going to buy straight away. What you want them to do is when they shop around, they can't find that product anywhere else. They have to come back to you.
You offer incentives for large purchases?
Yeah. It's usually bulk deals. So what I'm saying to you is that if you buy 12, I will give you one free. If you buy 4, I will give you the fifth one free. So really try to give reasons for people to buy more. Give them an incentive, but also give an incentive to your salespeople to want to sell more too. So the incentive is at two levels, the customer level and the salesperson level.
And on the customer level, you want to train the customer.
Absolutely. You want them to actually ask to buy more. You want to make sure that your order form gives them an option to buy more. Not how many you want, but actually train them to say you need 5. Now, we can do that in many organisations because what we do is we create a delivery charge if the purchase is under $250. So what happens if you go onto Amazon, for example, is the classic one. Many people buy more books because the delivery rate comes down. Am I not being trained to buy more? Why can't I do that? One of the keys of doing that is to understand that you put a minimum order level if the delivery is free of charge. What is that minimum order level? And most people will say, okay, I want to hit the minimum order level to actually get the free delivery. It's amazing what occurs.
Finally, sell service contracts.
Yeah, what we mean by that, Michael, is, and it's probably the best way to explain it, is an example we've just recently had. We had a client that recently purchased a CRM package, which is a software package to help them to manage all of their sales leads and prospects. In buying the package, we were offered, for an additional charge of $49 a month, an ongoing service help desk facility that all the salespeople could use. Now, at that particular point in time, all of the salespeople were trained, and there was eight of them. They all said, this is a wonderful package, but we need help if we get stuck. We bought the $49 per month package. Now, they signed us up for 12 months at $49 each. Now, that's $600 a year times eight. That's $4,800 in additional revenue. That's why it's really important to understand what you're actually selling. You're not just selling products, you're also selling consultancy and service. Turn it into a product and then start to sell that when you sell the big package.
Tony Gattari, Achievers Group. Where do we start to improve our business cash flow? Tony Gattari of Achievers Group, himself a master salesman over many years with Harvey Norman, has some strong thoughts. He says they can apply to any business.
Michael, there are basically six broad areas that you can do to improve your cash flow. The first one is to increase your revenue. And let me just chunk down a couple of strategies there. One, learn to increase your prices. Now, that's a big one. You know, if I was to say to any business client right now, what should they be looking at is increasing their prices. Because the biggest challenge that most business owners have got is increasing their prices, because the challenge is not with their customers, it's with them. So you've at least got to increase your prices by the CPI rate every single year. So that's one that I'd be looking at.
But you don't want to lose your customer.
You don't want to lose your customer, but you do have to improve your prices. But a lot of that fear is created by the owner, not the customers. We actually had a client, it was remarkable. We asked him to increase his prices by 10%. He hadn't increased his prices in 4 years. He was horrified, Michael. He said, I'm going to lose all of my clients. I can't do it. I said, trust us. Just do it. He sent out a letter. He increased his prices by two increments, 5% each 6 months. He rang us up and he said, I didn't lose one client. His business went from cash flow negative to cash flow positive. It was extraordinary.
What price range were his products?
His price range of his products were, the average dollar sale was around $320-odd. And the greatest barrier he had was him. He was horrified. His staff were even worse, because they had to sell the cheapest. They had to be the cheapest. We've got to be the cheapest. We've got to be the cheapest. And they were selling a commodity. And I said, no, you've got to increase your prices and then leverage your marketing. The other area that I'd be looking at in trying to improve your cash flow is you need to increase the speed at which you receive payments. Now, what do I mean by that? I really mean that you need to work on your accounts receivables. You need to make sure that you invoice on the day that you've complete the work. You need to make sure that you put the due date on every invoice. Not say, please pay us in 30 days, but on the physical date. You've got to make sure the date's really, really big. And you've got to make sure that you have an unreasonable person in your business who collects money. And sometimes that's not the owner, because the owner thinks, if I ring people up asking for money, they may not buy from me anymore. So really get somebody who's really good at being a tough bastard, okay? Employ them and do that work really, really well. The other area that I'd certainly look at is try to reduce the time that you pay expenses. So extend the payment cycle out. Now, when I was at Harvey Norman, one of the things that we were fantastic at doing was asking for extended credit. If you don't ask, you don't get. If you are going to pay people early, ask them for a settlement discount. But it's quite amazing what you can do when you ring up your suppliers and say, we will take extra stock if you give us extra time to pay. So that's another strategy that I'd be looking at. The other one, spend less.
Well, that's easier said than done.
Yeah, it is. But in order to spend less, you've got to measure where your expenses are. We tend to put a lot of emphasis on, okay, let's measure sales. We spend an enormous amount of time on, let's set a budget for sales. Okay, what I'm suggesting that every organisation needs to do is they need to put an expenses budget and measure your expenses as a percentage of sales against this year versus last year as a percentage and continue to drive those costs down. And in business, the biggest area of expenses is usually staff. And all I'm suggesting is measure your people not on their movement but on their achievements. And look at ways of reducing your costs on an ongoing basis by measuring it consistently.
What other sort of areas do you find that businesses maybe spend too much?
Assets that aren't working for them anymore. They're looking at machinery, cars, equipment that is tying up cash. Inventory is a huge one. And a lot of retailers don't have inventory budgets. They tend to think they have to buy a lot of stock to get the right price. And it's insane because the larger your warehouse, the more inventory you'll have. The principle is order light, order often, and work off inventory stock turns and measure those stock turns on an ongoing basis and continue to drive them down.
And then you start looking at using other people's money.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think it really comes down to one thing here. If you're in business, you've got to make a decision and you've got to cross the line. You've got to stop looking at your business as an expense. You've got to look at it as an investment. You will not actually reap the returns if you're not willing to sow. And sometimes a business will not survive without money. Get over it. Now, if you're not willing to invest money into a business, work for someone else. It's not for you. All right? So there is heaps of money out there. If you have a wonderful business, go out there and get money. Now, there are two forms of money, debt or equity. Okay, you can actually factor your receivables, so you can get money in. You can actually put a line of credit. So all I'm suggesting is that the listeners understand that one of the biggest principles you need to get a handle of in all the businesses we've worked with, over 120 across the world, is one of the key challenges that most businesses have got is how do I improve my cash flow? I'm making money, but what I've got to do is I've got to have enough cash every single month in order to support the growth. And if you are interested in growing your business, understand what your cash flow needs are before you grow the business. And really look at strategies that you can incorporate into your business immediately to give you immediate cash flow gains.
And if you are short of money and you are worried about it, you shouldn't worry about getting an investor.
Absolutely not. Because you've actually got to look at it from an abundance perspective. If I get an investor, okay, and I give away 20% of my business, the pie's getting larger. Am I not getting a larger percentage because the pie is getting greater? This is what happens. We want to control everything. But a great business is never built from one person. It's usually a great team. And that team doesn't just mean employees. It can actually mean investors. And all I'm suggesting is that when you do get an investor, make sure you control the agenda, not them. Because their agenda might be very, very different from yours. So you must ensure that the investors you bring on understand what you're looking for and what they are willing to give you.
Tony Gattari, Achievers Group. We're all leaders, but the levels of our leadership change depending on the time and the circumstances. Tony Gattari of Achievers Group has reached that conclusion after compiling a list of leadership levels. He's a leader himself, after many years in senior sales management with Harvey Norman. Tony Gattari, how do you define leadership?
Michael, leadership is influence. Nothing more, nothing less. Now, let me explain that to you. We all are leaders. Now, I've got a 9-year-old daughter. Now, we have a cat. My 9-year-old leads the cat. That is leadership. So leadership is influence. We all have leadership. We are at different levels of leadership in different circumstances and different times.
Okay. Describe the levels.
Okay. Well, the first level of leadership is the most basic level. It is based on your rights. People follow you because of your position. Allah, I'm the boss.
I've got the business card. Your job description says that you need to report to me. That is the most basic level. Now, your leadership will not grow past your job description. And it's the most basic level of leadership. But that leadership is not sustainable in the long term. People will leave you because they'll get bored, and it's based out of fear, not out of faith. The next principle is to actually move to level two. And people then follow you because they give you permission. They like you. That's based on relationships. Now, that's really important to build those relationships, but you don't want to stay there too long, because what tends to happen is we have the friendship factor but not the results factor. The next level, which is the level that I think every leader needs to get to, is what is called production. People follow you because of your results, right? You're a winner. They want to hang around winners. This is very, very important. So it's extremely important to actually show people inside an organization what you've achieved, because they will want to follow you based on the results that you can actually achieve. Then we have the next level, which is people will follow you because of your reproduction. It's the development. It's not so much what they can do for you, it's what you can do for them. You're actually creating disciples that continue to do the leadership process. And this is where they will form long-term commitments. People who stay there for a long period of time, they follow the person. And the last level of leadership is probably the most difficult one to do, and to be completely transparent, very, very few people reach this level. Very few people. There's probably only a few people in history. People like Gandhi would be an example of this. Martin Luther King would be an example of this. Jesus would be an example of this. But they are leaders that people follow because of who they are and what they represent, to the point that they were willing to die for them based on their leadership qualities.
Now, you've got the seven principles of leadership levels.
Yeah. I've given you that little list. Okay, now here's a couple of principles. One, the higher you go, the longer it takes. It's really easy to go from level one to level two, but to go to level two, which is permission, to production, level three, takes some time, because you've got to get results in order for people to follow you. The higher you go, the higher level of your commitment. This is really interesting. Okay, a lot of people want to actually go up the leadership ladder. The leadership ladder means that you have to accept more responsibility with less rights. Number three, the higher you go, the easier it is to lead. Number four, the higher you go, the greater the growth, because you are actually transformed in that whole process. Number six, you never ever leave the base level. And here's a really big one for me, is that in organizations that we've consulted to, you are at different levels of leadership with different people. And a very, very smart leader will understand what level of leadership they're at with their team and will try to move up that level.
With their team or with individuals in the team?
Individuals in the team. Okay. Now, let me just give you an example. I'll give you a classic example of marriage. This is where we can lose this. Okay. I got married. Now, I was an appalling husband for the first 7 years. Okay. Because I'm a wog. And I just felt that my responsibility was to get results, okay? So I just felt that I had to work and work and work and earn money. Now, here's the principle based on this triangle concept. Number one, I had the position. I was married. Covenant relationship, you know, death to us part, all right? Okay, between God and me and the whole wife, okay? That's the way. It was done in the church. So it was based on, first of all, it was based on rights. Now, what happened, Michael, is that I moved from level one to level three based on results. Mm-hmm. What did I start to do? Oh, I've just got to earn the money now, honey. I didn't form level two, which is relationships. This is what a lot of people tend to do. They've got the right. They try to move to results too quickly without creating relationships. I had to go back and form a healthy relationship with my wife in order to go to the next level correctly. I tried to skip
And you achieved it?
Yeah. It took me 4 years, and I was the biggest problem because I was the idiot, not her. And I realised that what I needed to do is I needed to show her that I cared about her.
And you've now created a daughter as well.
I have. We have two daughters, and we're very, very happily married. And she's my 14-year bride. And we've just gone away for our second honeymoon.
Tony Gattari, Achievers Group.
If you enjoyed the content you heard today and can see how Achievers Group can help you more, we'd love to hear from you. You can visit us online at www.achieversgroup.com.au.